सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ So we are introducing, we are in the introduction of this very major, it is one of the major Upanishads, Ishavasya Upanishad, pretty high in the, you know, hierarchy of Upanishads. And in the introduction, we have studied the six pramanas, the six means of knowledge. I told you the entire Chetis on these pramanas, these means, has been done by the Sankhya school of philosophy, and Bhagwan Shankaracharya has accepted them without any objection. So why waste time in doing the same thing that they have done? So they have done a proper thorough research, and we just take what they have researched and presented. So in that they say that there are six means of knowledge. The first one being direct perception, pratyaksha pramana. The second one being anuman, inference. Third one, upaman or comparison. Arthapatti or presumption. Anupalabdhi, which is absence. And the last one, shabda pramana. So in the shabda pramana, there can be the danger of misunderstanding a word, because there are words with multiple meanings. And I gave you the example of table. Table can mean a writing table or it can mean a mathematical table. So when we take shabda as the means of knowledge, we have to be extremely careful that we are very familiar with the language, the grammar, the usage of those words. Okay, and we will see the same thing in this Upanishad. It will come further and I will remind you of this point. So for now, just keep in mind that shabda pramana is there. Yeah, but first of all, we need to be able to read or listen to a guru, and then the words have to be interpreted correctly. Whoever is interpreting the words, they have to interpret it correctly. In shabda pramana, I told you, there is laukika shabda pramana and alaukika shabda pramana. So laukika is of the world, and of the world, the present day laukika pramana is TV, news, newspaper, radio. All these fall under this laukika pramana, shabda pramana, which means that through the medium of words, we are either reading the newspaper or listening to the news on TV or radio or anything. And we are getting knowledge about things that are happening all over the world. Sitting in our own comfortable home, we know what is happening in the entire world. And that is a laukika shabda pramana. There is also the sambhava pramana, under which fall the Puranas. Sambhava means it is possible. So when we read the Puranas and we see all these different stories told, yeah, it is possible. And the third type is Aitika Pramana, Shabda Pramana again. Aitika, Aitihasik. So Itihasa. So the Ramayana and the Mahabharata, they fall under this Itihas, as it happened. Itihas. So as it happened, that is what history is. So all these are falling under the Laukika Pramana, Shabda Pramana. And then there is the Alaukika Shabda Pramana, and under this category, so Laukika, understand the word to mean that can be perceived by the senses. Laukika is whatever, so we may not have perceived that history, but somebody has seen it and then they wrote about it and now we are reading it. Okay, so maybe not directly we have to see, of course, what happened in the past, how we can see, but somebody was there who saw it and who wrote it down. So Laukika, anything that falls under Laukika has been perceived by somebody else, or we can ourselves perceive it. But Alaukika Shabda Pramana is that which cannot be perceived by the senses. Okay, so the means of knowledge, Alaukika means of knowledge, are the means to know what does not and cannot fall under the purview of the senses. And that's why it becomes Alaukika, not of this world, out of this world. And the example is Swargalok. Who has seen Swargaloka to come and tell us? But the Shastras talk about these 14 lokas, Swargaloka, Gandhara Loka, Gandharva Loka, Kinnara, Brahma, Satya Loka, and these all four, seven worlds up and seven worlds below the earth. we have no idea. Nobody has perceived them, but the Shastras talk about them. So therefore, the Shastra becomes an Alaukika Shabda Pramana for Swarga Loka, Gandharva Loka, etc., etc. All right. So that is one. Now, Vedanta or Upanishad, these two words are synonyms. Vedanta means Upanishad, Upanishad means Vedanta. They fall under this category, Alaukik Shabda Pramana. The reason of telling you, the reason for telling you all the means of knowledge is that the knowledge of the Supreme Reality only can fall under Shabda Pramana. There is no other means that we can use to know the Supreme Reality directly. And the reason is the Supreme Reality is beyond the purview of the senses. The other pramanas that we saw, see, starting from direct is of course directly seen, directly heard, etc. But all other means are based on direct perception. So if I infer that there is a fire, directly I have to see the smoke first. See, direct perception is essential. Then if I have to presume that there was rain during the middle of the night, I have to see by my own eyes the wet road. If I have to know the absence, then I must see all of you, and then I know that one or two people are absent. So direct perception is involved in all. If I have to compare, I have to see that first original object first, and then I know that, okay, this Neela guy looks like this cow, but at least I have to see the cow. So every means of knowledge falls under, actually, its direct perception is required. And because of that, the Supreme Reality can never be known by the first five means of Pramana, only by Shabda Pramana. And then in Shabda Pramana, it cannot fall under Laukika, because not only that we cannot see, but nobody else has seen it in the past, and nobody else is going to see it, perceive it visibly with the senses. And therefore, it can never fall under Laukika Shabda Pramana. It falls under Alaukika Shabda Pramana. All right? Okay? So that is the thing. Now, coming to the Upanishad, the word Upanishad or Vedanta, let's talk about the word Vedanta first. So when we break this word, it's Veda Anta. And then if you just translate it, then it is the end of the Vedas. And this word, end of the Vedas, or this meaning of the word Vedanta, people misunderstand. I told you words have multiple meanings. So people misunderstand that all this Vedanta portion is the end portion of the Vedas. So they actually think that there are, and this is how we also say it. And maybe that is also part of the misunderstanding. We say, oh, there is a mantra portion, there's a Brahmana portion, there is an Aranyaka portion, and then there is Vedanta. So the idea that is conveyed by this statement is that first the mantra portion is there, then the Brahmana, next section, you know, we have chapters. So first chapter is this, second chapter, third chapter, and last chapter. It is not like that. Okay. The correct meaning of the word Vedanta is that knowledge which nothing else remains to be known. So Vedanta means actually end of knowledge. End of knowledge means once I have this Vedantic knowledge, there remains nothing else to be known. And that is the correct meaning of the word Vedanta, not end of the Vedas. And therefore, we find that in the Vedas, the Upanishads, not all these Upanishads are just in one chapter number 4 of the Veda. They are strewn throughout the 3 sections. So some of the Upanishads are in the Brahmana portion. Some of them are in the mantra portion, as Ishavasya is part of the mantra portion of the Veda. Okay. And I'll tell you which Veda it belongs to and all that, but just to know. So some fall in the mantra portion, some fall in the Brahmana portion, and some fall in the Aranyaka portion. So they are not all of them in one bunch, chapter 4. They are in the first 3 chapters, if you were to say that, you know, these are chapters. They could be anywhere in these 3 chapters. Now, the total of all those, it is called as Vedanta, but they are not like all in one bunch. Okay, please understand that. So Vedanta, the meaning to be taken is end of knowledge, or knowing which nothing else remains to be known. It should not be taken as the end portion of the Vedas. Number one, Upanishads are 108 in number, and most of the commentators have commented on the 10 major Upanishads. Question is, Who decided the 10 Upanishads? Why did it's not just Bhagavan Shankaracharya, any other commentators also, if you see, only these 10 have been commented upon. And they are Kena, Katha, Prashna, Aitareya, Taitareya, Mundaka, Mandukya, Chandogya, Brahadaranyaka Upanishad, and one more, Taitareya, Aitareya and Taitareya. So these are the 10, Aitareya and Taitareya. Okay, so it's Kena, Katha, Prashna, Aitareya, Taitareya, Mundaka, Mandukya, Chandogya, Brahadaranyaka, and Isha. Oh God, let's not forget Isha. Ishavasya, that's the one that we are studying. So these are the 10 Upanishads that everybody has commented upon. The reason that these 10 Upanishads, there is one Upanishad, and unfortunately I can't recall the name, where the teacher is Sri Ram and the student is Hanumanji. There is one Upanishad like that. And in that Upanishad, Sri Ram has told his student that if anyone studies these 10 Upanishads, and these are the ones that are named in that Upanishad, they need not study the 108 Upanishads. And because of that, these 10 were picked out by Bhagavan Shankaracharya, and they've been picked up by other commentators, and the commentaries are there on this. Now, the other Upanishads, of course, now Guruji's commentary has come, and I'm sure there are other people, but these ancient masters, spiritual masters of the time of Bhagavan Shankaracharya, these are the 10 Upanishads that have been commented upon. And Gurudev also wrote his commentary on, I don't think he has done Chandogya and Brahadaranyaka. He has done on the eight Upanishads. We do have the CCMT books. Chandogya and Brahadaranyaka Upanishad are really huge, 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 huge. So these are the 10 major Upanishads, and Ishavasya is one of them, of course. The word Upanishad itself is made out of three syllables, Upa, Ni, and Sad. In a general sense, if this was a Yajna setting and I was restricted by time, the only meaning that I would give is Upa is near, Ni is Nishchayatmaka Buddhi, means firm determination, and Sad is to sit. So sitting near a guru, this Upasana word also, that Upa is there. Upa means near. Upasana, Upahar. So all those Upa is the same. So sitting near a guru with a firm determination to learn the knowledge is the meaning of the general meaning of the word Upanishad. But if we have the time now, so if we were to go deeper, this Sad Dhatu, Sad word, Sad syllable, comes from the Dhatu Shardali Dhatu. Shardali Dhatu. The verbal root of the word is Shardali Dhatu. I think I have told you before that in Sanskrit, every word has a verbal root. That verbal root can have one or two or multiple meanings. In a commentary, the commentator's responsibility is to give all the meanings of that verbal root and then explain why he is taking only one or two meanings of that root and why he is not taking the other meanings. That is the responsibility of the commentator. So with the Shardali Dhatu has three meanings. One is to destroy, one is to loosen, and third one is movement, gati. Gati, okay? So Bhagavan Shankaracharya in his commentary, and he has commented on this word in his commentary on the Kathopanishad. So every Upanishad he has not written, Kathopanishad he has given this. So he says that in the case of the word Upanishad, the verbal root, the meaning, the three meanings of this verbal root, all of them apply to the word. How is that? So if we take Shardali Dhatu or Sad to mean to destroy, he says this knowledge destroys ignorance. So Upanishad is the means to destroy ignorance and gain knowledge. Okay, and this is the primordial ignorance. This is not ignorance of chemistry and physics and mathematics. No. This is the ignorance of the fact of who I am. Because right now I'm ignorant. I think I'm the body, mind, and intellect. So that ignorance. So it destroys the ignorance. So Upanishad can be taken as a means to destroy ignorance. loosening. That's the next meaning. Loosening. He says we can take it in the meaning of loosening, loosening the bonds of samsara. Today, we as householders, we are totally bound to this samsara. And what is this samsara? Is this just going up and down, running around in the pairs of opposites? So that bondage will be loosened by this knowledge called as Upanishad. Upanishad, the word itself means knowledge. Vedanta means knowledge. Okay, so this is that knowledge which can loosen the bonds of samsara, the bondage of samsara. So Upanishad can be taken, the sat dhatu can be taken in the meaning of loosening. And gati, gati is movement. So this knowledge will accelerate your movement towards the supreme reality, towards the knowledge. And therefore, all three meanings apply in the word Upanishad. See, if you are a householder for us, then even if the Upanishad can loosen the bondage of samsara, it has done its purpose. It doesn't, studying Upanishad doesn't mean that now we are studying the high texts, now suddenly we'll get liberated. No, no, no. But even if it loosens a little bit of this bondage, what is the bondage? I'm body, I'm mind, I'm intellect. This is mine, that is yours. This is all, this falls under bondage. So if it loosens the bondage for us, this fine. If it gives, if it accelerates our movement towards the knowledge, it has served its purpose. Like maybe it may not be loosening suddenly, but at least if it is prodding us to study more, encouraging us to study more. So it gives acceleration to our studies. Then also Upanishad has done its purpose. And of course, the highest, if it destroys our ignorance, nothing like it. Okay? And that is the purpose of the Upanishad. These are the three purposes. Any one of these purposes is served for us, for any one of us, Upanishad has done its job. All right? So that is the meaning of the word Upanishad. Now, coming to this Ishavasya Upanishad. Okay, one more thing about Upanishads is, the names are pretty randomly given. Sometimes, most of the times, this now Ishavasya only if you take, it is the first word of the first mantra. They will put it in the name. Like Kenopanishad begins, the first mantra, if you remember, begins with Kene Shitam Preshitam, right? Kene. So Kenopanishad it became. Now Kathopanishad is Kathopanishad. It's called Kathopanishad because it belongs to Kathashaka of that Upanishad. So therefore it's Kathopanishad. Gurudev in his commentary, I think to that time it was very, to simplify, he said that it begins, the first chapter of this Kathopanishad is a story. It's actually just a story. So he says it is Katha Upanishad. But that is really not correct. It is not Katha Upanishad. It's called Kathako Upanishad or Katha Upanishad. Katha Upanishad. So it belongs to the Katha Shaka of that Upanishad. And that's why that name is there. Ishavasya. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad is in the Aranyaka portion. It was given in the forest. The teacher, Yajnavalkya, and his wife, Maitreyi, they lived in the forest. And that's where that Upanishad was given. So the name was given Brihadaranyaka. That way. So the name of the Upanishad is pretty random. There is not like a science to it that this like that. And that is what it is. Okay, so that's about the name. Now, Ishavasya Upanishad belongs to the Yajurveda. Okay, Bhagwan Ved Vyasa, I told you, he compiled the Vedas. He did not write the Vedas. Vedas are apaurusheya. Apaurusheya means not written by any mortal. And the reason for that, why do we say it is not written by any mortal, is because there are no mistakes in the Vedas. If it is written by any mortal, it is subject to some sort of error. Because the range of knowledge of that mortal person, that person is limited. Also, the subject matter of the Vedas is alaukika. It is something which is beyond the purview of the senses. How can an ordinary human being write something which he has never perceived or which he can never perceive? It'll be an imagination then. So therefore, we say that this is a poem. This is not written by anybody. These are mantras that were revealed to the rishis in their highest states of meditation. Now, Bhagwan Vedvyas, and previously there was nothing written. It was only orally, verbally being taught to the student. And that's where it came Guru Shishya Parampara. The Guru taught the Shishya became a Guru, and he taught more Shishyas, he taught more disciples, and this is how the knowledge was passed. But Bhagwan Vedvyas knew that in Kali Yuga, nobody is going to have the time to sit near a Guru and study. So he compiled these, and I told you, I think last time, that the prose, where it's predominantly prose, it became Rig Veda. Where it is predominantly ritualistic worship, so the mantras to be chanted in a Homa, in a Yajna, they went into the Yajurveda. The poetry verses where the meter would be there and a tune would be there went into the Samaveda, and the sciences went into Atharvaveda. Now, these four Vedas, Bhagwan Vedvyas had four disciples. So each disciple was given one Veda to start. They were taught. So the Rig Veda was given to Paila Rishi. Then the Yajur Veda was given to Yajnavalkya Rishi. No, Vaishampayan Rishi. I'm sorry. Yeah, the Yajur Veda was given to Vaishampayan Rishi. The Sama Veda was given to Jaimini. And this Jaimini is the same Jaimini who has written the treatise on the Karma Kanda, the Karma Sutras. So that Jaimini was a student of Bhagwan Vedvyasa. And the fourth one, Atharva Veda, was given to Sumantu. Okay, so four. That means, see, he knew all the four Vedas, but the disciples again became limited because he gave only one because capacity of the disciple, right? Now, with the Yajur Veda, what happened was, Vaishampayan Rishi had a student, Yajnavalkya, whose name was Yajnavalkya. So Yajnavalkya was taught the Yajurveda, but Yajnavalkya on his own also, what he did was he meditated on the Lord's Son. He himself meditated. And then the Lord's Son came and revealed some mantras to him. So those mantras that were revealed to Yajnavalkya, because they were revealed by the Lord's Son, they are known as Shukla Yajurveda. In Yajurveda, there are two parts. There is Krishna Yajurveda and Shukla Yajurveda. Krishna means dark and Shukla means bright. And the reason that this is known as bright is because they were given by the Lord's Son. So the mantras that were revealed to Yajnavalkya Rishi were Shukla Yajur, became Shukla Yajurveda, and the mantras that were already given to Vaishampayan by Bhagwan Vedvyasa are known as Krishna Yajurveda. All right, Ishavasya Upanishad belongs to the Shukla Yajurveda. Among the two, it belongs to the Yajurveda, but among these two shakhas or branches, it belongs to the Shukla Yajurveda. All right. Now, we are ready to go, and I hope I've told you everything that I know. If not, it will come back to me. This Upanishad itself begins with a Shanti mantra. So, even before the first mantra, there is a Shanti mantra here. And that mantra which we chant at the end of every session, this Upanishad gives it as the first mantra. So, that is the difference. So this one has a very long introduction, and the reason for this, you'll notice that Gurudev's books, Upanishads, commentaries have introduction, because when he started teaching the Upanishads, people didn't even know what this Upanishad was. And so before, and then he had time. So he was doing 40-day yajnas, 30-day yajnas. So the first few days were only this introduction was told to the people so that they can understand what, suddenly if he starts on the Upanishad, people will not know only, right? What is it? So that's why you see that there is a huge, all this is introduction. Okay, so that you can read on your own, Gurudev's it is. And if you look, it starts with a peace invocation. So we are going to start with that. It doesn't say it's a mantra one. It is not one mantra. Before the first mantra begins, there is this peace. And this is extremely important. So we are going to study it in detail now. Om Purnamadav Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. And as you can recall, this is our ending mantra, but now it begins, okay? That is whole. Purnam, Purnam Adaha. Purnam Adaha is the brain. So that is whole. Purnam Idam. This is whole. From the whole becomes manifest. Purnat Purnam Udachate. From Purna, Purnat is from Purna. Purna Udachate is to rise, to come into being, to get created. Purnasya Purnam Adaya. So from that Purna, Purnasya, from that Purna, if you remove this Purna, Purnam Avashishyate. What remains is Purnam. That is whole, this is whole. From the whole becomes manifest. From the whole, when the whole is negated, not whole, whole, but whole, what remains is again the whole. So this is an extremely important and very, very deep mantra. And then Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om, we know, is like calling the gods, right? Om. Like we say hello when the phone comes. If we say Om, it is calling the Supreme Reality. Okay, so, and every mantra begins with the letter Om. In chapter 10 of the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavan has said that among these syllables, I am Om. So there's also a reason that we say Om. And the reason that we say Shanti three times, we have seen this also, is to invoke peace from the three sources of agitation or sorrow. So one is Adhyatmik. Adhyatmik is there could be sorrow from my own personal body, like I could be sick or I could be having a headache or this thing. So we are saying let there be peace in the at the level of Adhyatma, which is the last one, Shanti. I'm going backwards actually. Adhyatma is the last Shanti is for this Adhyatmik peace. Adhyatmik is from the self. The middle one is from Adibhautik sources. Adibhautik sources are sources which are a little bit under my control. If I know that the class is starting at a particular time, then maybe I should leave office at a particular time. We hope that there are no accidents on the way. And that's why we are invoking that I'm driving home. May I not have an accident? May there not be a traffic hold up? May there be, you know, maybe not me, but some other accident. I'm caught on the highway. So that is Adibhautik. So slightly within our control. Adi Daivik is something beyond our control. So it is snowstorm comes. What can you do? A huge snowstorm, huge windfall, huge rainfall, tornado, tsunami. We have absolutely no control. If you really think of all these, we actually have no control on the other two also. Truly. Some control we have. If I know that this particular road is blocked, or I may be able to take another road, but may not be possible either. Do I have control when I'll get a fever or a headache or whatever? I really don't. I can take care of my body, but I can't. So we do say that there is from the self and then from these forces and then the phenomenal forces. And we say that the phenomenal forces we have, that is absolutely beyond our control. Absolutely beyond. Like, huge snowstorms, tsunamis, all that. What are we going to do? What as an individual? Okay. But in general, so we invoke peace at these three levels so that our studies are not interrupted. And we have seen this idea before. Now, in the verse, if you see this word Purnam is the keyword. I don't have to tell you that, right? If it's every line, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Seven times this Purna word has come in one mantra, which means that it is the most important word and which means that we need to understand it in complete detail. And the other two words which are important here is Adaha, which is that, and Idam, which is this. So these are the three words that we have to understand thoroughly. So we begin with Purnam. Purnam means full. If you just say Purna, full, complete, unlimited. Okay, so to understand Purna, it will be better if we start with what is Apurna. And the reason that we start with Apurna and we will understand it much better is because we are apurna. We are limited. Okay. So what we are, we will understand very well, very thoroughly. So let us try and understand what limited is. Now, I, as an individual, I think that I'm sitting in front of this computer. So obviously, I'm not in the bedroom. Obviously, I'm not in any other room in my house. Of course, I'm not in India. Of course, I'm not anywhere else in the world. Okay. So I think that I am limited. And this limitation is on account of space. Because I am in the space of this room. So I am in no other space. I'm not in the living room, bedroom, kitchen, outside the house, outside the building, outside Vancouver, outside Canada, anywhere. So there is a limitation on account of space, which I feel right now. Because my thing is that I'm sitting here. So I'm not in Calgary. I'm here. I'm in Vancouver. All right. Then I have the feeling that I'm born on this day and I've seen everybody go by, pass on. That means someday I'm also going to go on. So there is a limitation on account of time. Because I think that I was born on a particular day and I will be going on a particular day. So I am limited by time because I am only between my birth date and my death date. That's where I am. And then I'm nowhere else. So I think that I'm limited by time. The third limitation is limitation of objects. So I think that I am sitting on this chair, on the chair directly. So there cannot be any other object on this chair because I am sitting here. Anonya Bhav, it is called. It's a mutual absence. So because this computer screen is right in front of my eyes here, no other thing can be in that space where the computer is. So the limitations that I feel are on account of three things. Desha, Kala, Vastu. Desha, space. Kala, time. Vastu, objects. Is this understood correctly? All right. This is what I feel. So we can understand that very well. All of us are feeling that. You feel you're in Calgary, not in Vancouver. You feel that you're born on this day. I cannot even say probably. All of us are going to go someday. So someday will come where, you know, they'll say from this day to this day she lived. So, and objects, we know that where I am, there cannot be any other object. If I keep the book, then it is on me. It is not on the chair. On the chair, I am there. And then on me, the book can be kept, but not on the chair. All right, this. So if this is the definition of limited, then unlimited, what will unlimited be? It'll be Desha, Kala, Vastu, Aparichinna. What we are limited is Desha, Kala, Vastu, Parichinna. I am divided on account of space. I'm divided or limited on account of time. And I am limited on account of objects. But if I have to be Purna, if I have to be unlimited, then I cannot be limited by space. I cannot be limited by time. And I cannot be limited by objects. Okay, so now what, so that would be the mean. That means not limited by space means what? Means if I was unlimited, I should be here. I should be in Calgary, in Toronto, in Canada, in US, in Europe, in the world, in India, in space, in the universe, in the solar system, in the entire galaxy, in the black hole, whatever there is out there, I have to be there. If I have to be Purna or unlimited. Time, no matter what time, I have to be beyond time to be Purna. And I have to be in and through every object. So I cannot say that the computer is here, but I'm not there, which means I become limited by this object computer. So I should be able to say that even though the computer is there, I'm also there. I am there in the computer. I'm there in the book. I'm there in the mouse. I'm there in the scanner, in the printer, in the paper, in the calculator, whatever there is, in the pen. If I can claim that I am there in every single object, only then I will be unlimited by objects. So any entity which has to be unlimited has to be all pervasive, right? It has to be omnipresent. It has to be present at all times. Like For me, I cannot say that I was present before my birth date and I will be present after my death date. But this object, if it has to be unlimited, it was there before my birth, it is there now, and it will be there before after my death. So present. So it has to be present. And it has to be present in all spaces. So it at the same time, it has to be present in Vancouver, in Calgary, in Toronto, in Canada, in Europe, in Asia, in China, in wherever. In not only in the entire earth, but on the sun also, on the moon also at the same time, in all the planets, beyond the planets, everything. Only then it becomes Purna. So that is the meaning of this word Purna. Purna means that which is not limited by space, by time, and by objects. Okay? Understood? Now, what is Shruti saying? See, for Vedantins, I told you, Shruti Pramana or whatever Shruti says stays. No matter what, whether I understand it or not, whether I misinterpret it or not, is not Shruti's problem. We have full faith in what Shruti says. And if we cannot understand what Shruti is saying, or if we cannot make sense, we have to understand it correctly, what she means. We cannot say that, oh, she's wrong. How can this be possible? We cannot say that. And Vedantins don't. Shruti Pramana is top first priority is what Shruti is saying. And if Shruti is saying that, then that is correct. So now what Shruti is saying is, Purnam Adaha. Adaha is that. That is Purna. We don't know what that is. Huh? That is Purna. That's all she's saying. That's why Upanishad language, Vedic language is extremely mystic. And that's why we need a guru to tell us what this is. I don't know what it is. One sec. So, if we take this word that, generally this word that indicates some sort of farness. See, in common languages, that road, as opposed to if I say this road, or that door, as opposed to this book, then what the idea in your mind would be, that door is far away from her and this book is close to her. So that is something which is far, and this is something which is close. Now, when Shruti says that is Purna, by the word that, she means what can be the farthest from us is something that we can never ever perceive by the senses. Because now, see, science also is helping us, because we have the telescope, we have the microscope, we have so many things, we have people going on the moon, all that, right? So if Shruti is saying that, then that has to be something which can never ever be perceived by the senses of any human being. So that has to be understood as that which is beyond the purview of the senses. And that is Purna, she's saying. This is what Shruti is saying. That which is beyond the senses is Purna, which you cannot see is Purna. So it is unlimited by space, time, and objects. Okay? Clear? Now what she's saying is, Purnam Idam. Idam is this. Now we have to understand. I told you, we have to understand Purna word. We have to understand the word that. And we have to understand the word this. So what falls under this? That becomes very, very now important. Because she's saying this is full. So in full, by saying this, first of all, we indicate that this is very close to us. That's number one. Okay? Because that I told you, that as opposed to this is, that is far. And that's why we have the Tattvamasi. That thou art. You know, that thou is very close and that is very far, but that thou art. That's the meaning. Now, if that is what is beyond the senses, then this has to be something which is within the range of the senses, which is within the range of perception. So what falls under the range of our perception? That we need to know, all the elements, okay? So the aspects of this that fall under our range of perception, first of all, we begin with the five elements. I see the five elements, okay? perceive. I won't use the word see because I myself have told you that you cannot see space. So now if I say you can see the five elements, if you remember, you can question me saying, but you said we can't see. Perceive. Space is inferred, I told you. And when we say perceive, that means the first five pramanas, one of those pramanas, we have to be able to perceive that object. It doesn't matter. I cannot see space directly, but I do infer that there is space because when I move my hand in space, when I move my hand like this, my hand can move. So I know that there is space, right? I've inferred it. So it is perceived. So there is space, fire, air, water, and earth. So there's the first five. That's five. Second, what we perceive is the objects of perception, objects. And there are five of them. Right? Color and form, smell, taste, touch, and sound. These are objects. So see, when we think there are millions of objects, where can I perceive? I can't perceive anything which is in Calgary. I can say, you can say, I cannot perceive anything that's in your house. How do you say that we perceive all the objects? The object, if you take any object in this universe, they will fall under these five categories. And I can see, you can see color and form. I can see color and form. You can hear, you can taste, you can smell, you can touch. So the five objects of perception. Now, the next, so that's 10, huh? Keep count, 5 and 5, 10. The next five are the organs of perception by which I see these objects of perception. So again, we have five of those, right? We have eyes for color and form. We have nose for smell. We have tongue for taste. We have ears for hearing. And we have skin for touch. So that now brings it to 15. Okay? Then, and we can perceive these. Nah, I know my eyes, right? Through the mind, I know my eyes. I know my nose. I know my sense. So that is 15. The next set of five things that I perceive are my organs of action. So there are the hands, the legs, the speech, the tongue or speech, genitals, and the anus. That's the five. And the next five set of five is the actions that are being performed by these organs of action. Okay? So my hand is moving, I can see the movement. My legs are walking, I can see the walking. I know that I'm speaking. I can perceive my speech. So I know that. And so all the actions that are being performed by these organs of action are being perceived. So they all fall under idam. How many do we have now? 5, 10, 15, 20, 25. All right? Then I have the five pranas that I perceive. Prana, apana, vyana, udana, samana, right? So the five I perceive, right? I hear sounds in my stomach. I perceive that. It's because that's why I told you. It's not, when I say see, it means perceive. So it can be by any of the means. One is perception can happen by any of the five means, not the shabda praman, the five means, you know, and any organ or multiple organs. So there are five pranas are there. So that brings us to the count of 30. Then we have the mind, which is divided into four parts. Mana, buddhi, chitta, ahankara. We know that, right? We know our mind when it is in a flux. Should I do this? Should I not do this? Then we know our intellect when it comes to a decision. We have memory. Yeah, I'd done that. I took that highway last time and it was not good. So let me take this other one today. So memory and the ego, of course, we are very, very familiar with our own ego. That's four. And then there are the three gunas. We don't see the gunas, but we see their manifestation in our own self. Correct? That brings us to the count of 37. Okay? So all these 37 fall under the word idam. Normally, I will tell you what happens is, it's very easy for us to understand idam in the sense that I am here and beyond this physical body, whatever is there is idam. But this thing, I think it is not idam, it is me. So the point of all this telling this is for us to understand and abide in the fact that even the body is not me. That's very, very important. That's why this is a very, very important and very deep verse. Okay, it's not just like that only that Bhagwan has given so many categories, you know, this is this, this, this. It is not that. It is to tell us, because it is extremely hard for us. It is very easy for me to say that, you know, the computer is not me, the mouse is not, they're very easy. Okay, coming to clothes also, I can say, okay, glasses are not me, clothes are not me, jewelry is not me. That also I can live with and I'm willing to say, oh, body is not me. Oh, what do you mean? That becomes difficult. So that needs to be really, really understood, that the body is falling under idam. Body, mind, senses, everything, pranas, all is in idam. Okay, now, what is coming back to what Shruti is saying? We understood Purna, we understood that, we understood this. And now Shruti is saying, that is Purna. This is also Purna. Huh? So, are there two Purnas then? Right? Because she's saying it. That, yeah, that, okay. What is beyond it, that is Purna. What you see, Idam, that is also Purna. If we say that there are two Purnas, I told you, whatever Shruti says is correct. So if we say that there are two Purnas, both will be limited, right? There is one Purna over here and there is one Purna over here. That means this Purna has boundaries. That Purna also has boundaries. That means that Purna is also limited. This Purna is also limited. But then the definition of Purna gets totally negated, because we already defined Purna as unlimited. Now, if we say that Shruti is saying that is Purna and this is Purna, then there is one Purna over there and there is one Purna over here. That means Purna definition is negated, and we cannot negate the definition of Purna. We cannot negate that. Okay. So, if Shruti is saying that there is that is Purna and this is Purna, and if we cannot negate the definition of Purna to be limited, one of them has to be an illusion. All right. So, because there cannot be desha kala vastu parichinnata, there cannot be a division on account of space, time, and objects. So, there can never be two Purnas, which means two things. Either they are same, they're just one and the same, or they are one is an illusion. We cannot say that both are real. If you say both are real, Purna is getting negated. So both cannot be real. So either one is not existing only, is an illusion, or they are one and the same. All right. So just hold on to this thought, because we go further. Then what is the relationship then? What if they're both not there, if two are not there, if one is not real, is there a relationship between the two? So that is what now Shruti explains in this. Purnat Purnam Udachate, from that Purna. So that Purnat is belonging to the first one, Purnam Adaya, Adaha. So from that Purna, this Purna Uday is, you know, to rise. We say sun, Suryoday, right? So this Udachate is to rise. Rise you can take as birth, you can take as creation. So she is saying that from that Purna, this Purna has come, has been created. Okay. So means what? Means that is the cause and this is the effect. Right? From that, if I say this is my child, then I am the cause and the child is the effect. So she's saying from that Purna, this Purna has come, which means that becomes the cause, this is the effect. Okay, fine. Now, cause becoming effect, what do we know in our day-to-day life? See, there are two things which we are very familiar with. All of you do gardening. There's a master gardener sitting there, Abhimanyu. And you know that when you plant the seed and the plant comes out, if you go back into the soil and you want to get that seed, will you get the seed back as you had planted it? You can't. The seed is the cause. The sprout or the plant is the effect. But to give rise to the effect, the seed is getting destroyed. Common experience, huh? Nothing, no trick No, nothing tricky. You tell me that I don't garden. So any one of you, if you have found your entire seed after the plant has come out, do tell me. It'll come out of the fruit, but that same seed that you planted getting destroyed. So the cause and effect. So that is there, the cause and effect relationship, where the cause is getting completely destroyed and the effect is coming into being. That is one relationship. Now there is another relationship that we know in our day-to-day lives, all of us who make yogurt at home. So there is milk, and then there is culture, we add to it, and the next day morning, there is yogurt. Now, has the milk destroyed itself? No, it has only modified. So the cause modifies to give effect, or the cause destroys itself to give rise to the effect. Now, the question arises, is this cause-effect relationship, which Shruti is saying, between that Purna and this Purna? And why is she saying cause-effect relationship? Because she's saying that from that Purna, this Purna has come. Is that Purna is cause, this Purna is effect. Which type of this relationship is this? Is it the first kind, where the seed gets destroyed? Does that Purna gets destroyed to give rise to this Purna? Or is that Purna modifying itself to give rise to this effect? Because these are the two things that we know. You don't know any other thing. In the world, in our transactional world, we have seen this cause and effect relationship. So we know these two. So is it one of those two? So if we say that, okay, it is like the seed, so that Purna will get destroyed and then this Purna will come into effect. If we say that, the definition of Purna is again getting negated. Why? Because Purna is all pervading. It is all at all times. It is in all spaces. So if it gets destroyed, then it is becoming limited. I think I'm going to get destroyed. That's why I'm limited. I think I'm going to die one day. I'm limited. But Purna, we have already said, can never die because it is beyond time. It is beyond space. So we cannot say like the seed, it is getting destroyed. Okay. Another reason also is that we are seeing the existence. If we talk of Purna as Satchit Ananda, then that existence principle, we are seeing it even now. I am existing. Computer is existing. Mouse is existing. The cup is existing. Water is existing. Book is existing. Existence is there everywhere. So I cannot say that existence has gotten destroyed to give rise to the effect. Okay, fine. Then maybe Purna got modified like milk. Did Purna get modified? Can we say it gets modified? No, because it is unlimited. It can never, it is changeless. The substratum is changeless. So again, if we say that like milk, it modifies to give rise to the effect. Because Shruti has said, why are we saying all this discussion? Why are we doing is because Shruti is saying from that Purna, this Purna has come. Shruti is saying that. So we are trying to understand what does she mean? Does she mean that like seed, it gets destroyed? But if she means that like seed, then Purna definition is gone, negated. Okay, maybe not destroyed, maybe modified. Then again, Purna definition of Purna is getting negated. So she can't mean that it is like seed. She cannot mean that it is like milk. She cannot mean it that way because she's always right. I told you. That's why I told you the first thing is that Shruti is never wrong. Our understanding may be right, wrong, whatever. But Shruti is never wrong. But Shruti is saying from that. If Shruti is then saying, and if we cannot prove that the cause got destroyed or modified, it means that the effect has to be an illusion. There is no effect. There is no other way. There is no other way. Shruti is saying that is Purna unlimited. This is also unlimited. And from that, this has come. And I visualize this. This is an illusion. We don't say false. We say mithya. Okay, I've told you many, many times. There's a difference between mithya and false. False is that which does not exist at all. Horns on a rabbit. Never existed. Never did anybody see. Or the son of a barren woman who went into the forest, into the desert, and then from the mirage water, he took a bath in the mirage waters, and then he made a garland of sky flowers. False. Never existed. But Mithya is that which exists at one point of time and does not exist at another point of time. So if the effect, if Shruti has said that the effect has come from the cause, and that Purna is the cause, and that cause has not destroyed itself, nor has it modified. So without modification, if something has come out, it has to be an illusion. It has to be an illusion. Now, so if we think about this, this effect is nothing but the cause in a different form. Understand it? Like the ornament, the bangle is nothing but gold in a different form. So it's in the form of a bangle, it's in the form of a chain, it's in the form of a necklace, it's in the form of a ring. But no matter which ornament you touch, you are touching only gold. Or no matter which pot you touch, you are touching clay only. Or which part of the pot that you touch. Okay, so the name and form is an illusion, but the substratum is real. If you take the world to be the substratum, to be that Purnam, it's extremely real. If you take the name to be the name and form, it is false. It is mithya. How you're taking the world? The world can be real, but you need to understand that the world is real only in the form of its existence. And if you're going to give reality to the names and forms, then understand that it is mithya. I'm going to stop here. It's a very heavy topic. I want all of you to think about it. If there are any questions, you can write to me, or we'll go over this portion again. And next week you can ask. We have class next week. So you can ask me, think about it, right? A very, very important verse. And again, I promise once we go into the text proper, it won't be as heavy. Yes. It's really funny. Yesterday in the Sunday class, now one Balvihar parent has asked me to explain this. He's in my class and he said, we are chanting this Om Purnam. I said, you know what? I need a whole hour and a half I will need if I go into detail. But now for them, I'll really sort of make it very, very simple. But for you guys, you are pretty senior now, so you need to hear all this in detail. Okay, are there any questions? And it doesn't matter if you think of the question later, you can always ask me next time, or like I said, you can email me or whatever. Okay, my email address is with Abhimanyu or Ashok. So any doubts, anything that you think that how come whatever I said, do you think? What is she saying?
You said if you something about the world, if you take it as a substratum, then it is real. I did not understand that.
Yeah. So take the example of you have a gold chain in your neck. I have a gold chain in my neck, right? So if you see, if you take this chain as gold, yeah, it is real. But if you take this chain as a chain, it is false. You know why? Because tomorrow I could melt it and make it into a bangle. And the chain is no longer there. Okay. The chain is a name and it's a form. I call it a chain because of its form. It has this form, so I call it a chain. If I look at it as a chain, it is mithya. It is mithya. You do see it. I'm holding it. I do see it. I wear it. But it is mithya. Why? Because in a flash of a second, I can melt the gold and get a bangle out of it. Right? But what is happening to the gold? What is the reality of this chain? Is the gold. And no matter where I touch it, I touch it here, I touch it here, I touch it here, I touch it here. What am I touching?
Gold.
I think I'm touching the chain, but actually I'm only touching the gold. Okay, so that is exactly the case with this world. If when you touch the computer, when I touch the computer, if I think I'm touching existence, I can't touch existence. But if I imagine, it is real. But if I say this computer could be gone tomorrow, the name and form can change. Can change. And that's why it is mithya. Why do we say, what is mithya? I told you, that which is available right now for my cognition, but it may or may not be able. Today, this chain is available for your cognition. Tomorrow, you may not be seeing it. You might see it as a little bangle. That means the chain is falsified.
That's right.
What can be falsified at a later time is false even at the present time. Example, dream. Yeah. When I'm actually dreaming, I think it's very, very real. When I wake up, I know that it is false. If it got falsified upon my waking up, it was false while it was happening also. It is not that the dream was real while I was dreaming and then it became false. The real will always remain real. It can never, that is the definition of real. That which can never be negated, that which can never be falsified. That's why this Purna, that Purna is that one which can never be negated, which can never be falsified. But the name and form can always be negated, always be falsified. The name is because of the form. Today I'm calling this a chain because of its form. Tomorrow the same chain, I will be calling it as a ring or I will call it as a bangle. So what happened to that name? What happened to that form? It got falsified. Anything that can be falsified is false even today. So that's why today also the chain is false, but the gold is definitely real.
But the world is always false, right?
The world is always false. False, mithya, mithya. False is, yeah, mithya. It is because it is changing. It is changing. Look at now, it's all summer, right? So far it was so cold. How can you say the cold was real? And if you say that the summer is real, wait till September. Fall will come. Summer will be gone. Yeah. It's not. So therefore, the world is mithya.
You said the world, if you take the world as substratum, it is real. That it is that part I did not understand. Because I see the world as, for, you know, we have learned that the world is false.
Yeah, world is, yeah. But see it as a substratum means if you see this as gold, it is real.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that part I understood.
So same thing with the world. The world as the existence principle is real. That the world is, computer is existing, book is existing, I am existing, you are existing. The existence part is real, but this I and you is not real. Is mithya, huh? Mithya. Because you can see my body, right? I see you and you see me, but what you're seeing is only the body. And this body can change. And actually in 1 hour, it has already changed. Everybody's bodies have changed. If you ask a doctor, if there's a doctor in the class, he will tell you that so many cells have died and so many cells have been reborn. So the body has changed. The mind has changed. In 1 hour, we heard so much knowledge. The mind also changes, right? So it's mithya. Okay? That's why I say that if you look at where is your vision? If you look at the vision, world as as the substratum, substratum is real. The existence principle is very real.
Yeah. But the names and forms are false. Yeah.
Okay. Because they can change. Because they can change. Right? Okay. See, in our Maharashtrian tradition, even in the marriage, they change the name also. The first name also is changed. So I had a different name when I was unmarried. And as Jaya is not my birth name. My mother didn't give me that name. My mother had given me some other name. Then my husband changed it. So that name is, and tomorrow somebody else will give me some other name, right? So that's why the name is false. But in this case, I am real. I in the sense, you know, okay. Is it clear? Think about it. It's a deep verse.
Yeah, thank you.
But not that difficult to understand either. Okay, so we shall meet next time and we will continue with this verse and hopefully we'll be entering into the text proper. All right? Okay. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamavishishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Okay, I'll see you next time. And it's Gurudev's birthday on Wednesday.